I got the short straw this time. I got the session directly after lunch. I saw the line out there at the coffee machine. So hopefully everyone's caffeinated up and, you know, can make it through at least the next hour. If you fall asleep through one of their talks, that's okay. So anyone here that came to my session last year when I was in Sweden? Alan? Okay, a couple of you. So a lot of this stuff will be new, or at least me presenting it to you will be new. So that's exciting. I want to start before I really get in. Well, first off, I'm Stephen Thomas, for anyone watching the recording. I run the community site, biztalkgurus.com. Good resource, has some forums, a lot of BizTalk samples. All of our sample code from the book will be up there as well. I want to start by taking us back in time. Let's go back 3.5 years. So picture me 3.5 years ago, more hair, of course, and about 10 kilos less. So I looked, that was trim. And I remember we went up to Microsoft for the MVP summit, and Alan Smith, I think, was there. I think Richard was there. And we were in a session, and Microsoft was presenting to us what is now known as .NET 4 and App Fabric. And I remember all of us, you know, mostly hardcore BizTalk guys, walking out of that room and kind of freaking out. So the very first thing I did, picked up my cell phone, called my wife and said, "Hey, honey." Yeah, I always call her honey. So, "Hey, honey, I'm going to have to find a new job." Because this new set of technology was coming out. It was free. It was looked like it did a lot of the same things BizTalk Server did. So maybe I'm going to be out of a job. So about 9 months later, I was called back up to Seattle by Microsoft to pre-run the .NET 4, it was actually Alpha Labs for PDC 2008. It was me, Brian Logan, who's another hardcore BizTalk guy, now full-time Microsoft, and about 15 well-known WCF .NET programmers in this room. We were sitting there going through these labs, and at the end of the labs, the .NET guys were extremely frustrated. They're like, "I don't understand. I have this workflow thing. I have to declare variables. I have to drag things over." And Brian and I just sat there and looked at each other and like, you know, we understand this stuff. And not only that, we see that there's things we can do here that complement what we can do in BizTalk Server. And there's actually things in WCF and Workflow 4 that we couldn't do before in WCF and Workflow, and have a lot more control over persistence and things like that. So we see an opportunity. So what it really comes down to is, I think since most of you said you were BizTalk people, BizTalk resources, that you'll see as we go through the slides and we go through the demos, that a lot of the concepts and the tooling is going to look familiar to you, which really gives us a leg up on all these .NET people that can't really understand these visual tools. Is there anybody here that's tried to sell BizTalk to a client but lost it because of price? Okay, so what did they choose instead? Do they do custom code? And they did they do WCF or somebody else? Anybody lost out to WCF? Custom code? No? Okay. So what this will show us is, I've been on projects where we have had a BizTalk side and a WCF side of the shop. And I was responsible for the BizTalk side. We had another team of 7 resources doing the WCF side. The thinking was WCF was so different from BizTalk that you needed a whole other team to understand and manage that. With .NET 4 and these workflow services, it's going to make it so that us as BizTalk people are going to be more valuable to fill these gaps when a client doesn't want to spend the money for a full BizTalk server. Now, we'll understand these technologies and be able to implement that where maybe we would have lost out to maybe another company or another group in our same company. So keep this in mind as we walk through the slides and the demos. Here's our standard. Oh, yes. Oh, Lord, that's usually not what I get commented on. I think we have to do it over here. No. Hello? I don't think that worked. Wrong headset. Hello? Hello? Is that better? Not better. I don't see it moving. There it is. Hello? Hello? Is that better? Better. Okay. Okay. We all know this. We have a 23% discount. Great deal, anyone that wants it. So what I'm going to cover today is relates to chapter 2 and 3 in our book. It covers some WCF and Workflow 4, as well as Windows Server App Fabric. So if there's a lot of new technologies that you guys are going to see today, and I wanted to highlight on one slide really what you need to take away from this session. I started off with about 20 things on this slide and realized I need to cut it down. No way anyone's going to remember all 20 things. So one of the core things I want you to understand is that .NET 4 and App Fabric are really two core pieces of technology. We have a hosting component and we have a caching component. That caching component is going to be talked about in a whole other session that Ewan's doing tomorrow. The hosting we have available to us in our .NET 4 offers both tracking and persistence, and it's very easily configurable. We're scalable in that we can have multiple servers running our App Fabric and all connect to a single central database to work against. We have very easy F5 debugging, which in BizTalk Server we have debugging, but I'll show you in the demo how simple it is inside Workflow 4. One of the best things, and what I found from my last project when we had a team of WCF developers, is they spent a lot of time touching configuration files. We wanted to write messages to disk, do archiving. That was substantial configuration effort on their side. We'll see now that with App Fabric, there's no need to touch configuration files. We'll also see that Workflow Services is kind of a new concept in .NET 4. And it combines and integrates WCF and Workflow very tightly to each other to give us a more messaging type feel of a scenario. And lastly, and most important, I get made fun of this a lot at work. I want everyone to understand how great it is to be a drag and drop developer. There's nothing wrong with it. I'm proud to say I drag and drop the shape on the workflow, and there's nothing wrong with that. So let's start off by thinking about football and App Fabric. So what do these two things have together? Well, let's take a look on the left, and this is what probably most everyone in the room considers football. Let's take a look on the right. Sorry, my image isn't very good, but this is what I consider as football. So what this gets into is the overall App Fabric confusion. So Microsoft has two things that they both call App Fabric. And it depends on kind of who you're talking to, what they're really talking about. So we have basically two versions of App Fabric. We have a cloud-based version, and we have a server-based version. The cloud-based version represents primarily the service bus for now, as well as an access control feature. The plan is to add more to that as time goes on. We have a session on that tomorrow that I'll be giving as well. And that's called Windows Azure Platform App Fabric. Now, the local version that you run in-house is called Windows Server App Fabric. And that's intended to run locally. That would run in your data centers. So for the rest of this talk, when I refer to App Fabric, I'm talking about our local App Fabric, the Windows Server App Fabric. So to further confuse things, App Fabric was known as a lot of different things over the past few years. It was known probably most relevantly by Dublin and Velocity. These are the code names, Dublin for the server side of things, Velocity for the caching side of things. It was also known as extensions to the application server role. If you came to my session last year, that was really the pitch Microsoft was giving on these new technologies. They've kind of backed away from that slightly, and now going with the App Fabric name. It's also simply been known as hosting and caching, and also simply as Microsoft's application server. So now, after we get rid of the confusion between App Fabric in the cloud and App Fabric local, now most of us being BizTalk people are further confused by the locally running App Fabric and our BizTalk server. So we can look at these two, and we both have admin tools. We both have persistence. We both have monitoring. And we both have technologies that allow us to do declarative programming in the way of workflows. So now we look and see BizTalk Server costs $35,000 a proc, and AppFabric is free. So what's the deal here? As we go through the next slides and as we get to the end, I'll try to clarify, you know, really, what do you get for that $35,000 in BizTalk Server, and really whether it's worth that cost to your implementation. So let's take a look real quick at what WCF is. WCF at a high level was Microsoft's communication framework. The quote there is directly from Microsoft's site. It's part of the .NET framework that provides a uniform programming model for rapidly building service-oriented applications that communicate across the web and the enterprise. That pretty much summarizes it about as well as I could. It's essentially used to expose our operations as a service for other people to easily discover and consume. To be able to implement WCF, you need to know your ABCs, which is address, binding, and contract. And one of the new features of .NET 4 is the ability to have a routing service built into our WCF system. Richard has a whole session on that, so I'll save all the excitement there for him. Next, we have Workflow, which is Microsoft's declarative programming framework. Microsoft says this provides a programming model, in-process workflow engine, and rehostable designer to implement long-running processes as workflows in .NET applications. Now, they don't say things in here like it's an integration tool. They don't say things in here like we're going to do mapping and we're going to do schema editing and we're going to do adapters. They say we're a programming model and a programming framework, which then we can leverage in our .NET applications. So workflow was new in .NET 3.0, and it has been greatly enhanced and improved in .NET 4. Is there anybody here actively using Windows workflow? So like two people in the room. So is there anybody here actually using AppFabric in production? Okay. Is there anyone here? That's actually a zero. Is there anyone here that's looked at AppFabric? Okay, perfect, perfect. So with the .NET 4.0, we actually have a little bit more in terms of a flow control as we did before with past versions of workflow. We have a sequential flow control, which is one after another. And we have a flowchart flow control, which gives us more of a dynamic flow through our system. In the demo I give tomorrow for human workflow, we'll see this in action. State machine was something that was around, and I think it came out in 3.0. And it gave us the ability to model like a shopping cart. You add something to a shopping cart, and then you delete something, et cetera. That's coming back, I think, in a later version of .NET, but right now support for state machines no longer included in .NET 4.0. We have much better content-based correlation. In past releases of .NET, you could do some sort of correlation using some type of GUID. Now we can do content-based correlation, which we're going to actually see here in our demo. And we have this new enhanced workflow service I talked about already that's going to tightly combine our WCF and workflow together. So anybody that looked at using workflow in the past will understand that we're missing a key feature. So we build our WCF service, we deploy it into IIS, we have a host for that process. A host being we have something to run that in, we have the ability to add tracking and tracing through config files, etc. Before .NET 4.0, workflow was BYOH, which was bring your own host. So if you wanted to host it, you were going to have to build it yourself. Most of the time, this would be like a Windows service that would host your workflow. Now, .NET 4, the actual framework itself, adds hooks into tracking and monitoring in both our WCF and our workflow features in the framework. Now, these hooks are then is what is actually exposed through AppFabric. So AppFabric is extensions to IIS, which give us a graphical user interface, as well as PowerShell commandlets into accessing anything we can do through the graphical user interface. So at the end of the day, what we really get is now a first-class hosting environment for our Windows workflow. And for us BizTalk people, that is kind of representative of the experience we get when running an orchestration inside our BizTalk server. So this is a high-level overview. I think it's the same slide I showed last year. The fundamentals haven't changed. Everything here in green is what's added or enhanced in .NET 4.0 and App Fabric. We can start down here at the bottom, and we have our IIS WAS process running ASP.NET and workflow and WCF. On top of that, we see we have our runtime databases. And we have a database for persistence, and we have a database for monitoring. The database for persistence is really the core database for all of our real App Fabric and workflow persistence logic. We have on top of that a set of runtime services to handle our persistence, our hosting, our caching, and our monitoring. We're going to go into deeper on the persistence and monitoring on another slide. Our hosting is typically what we think of as our IIS, and caching is actually a whole other talk in and of itself, which is our what was known as Velocity. On top of all these runtime services and components, we have a set of management APIs, which is PowerShell commandlets, which means when we want to do something inside App Fabric, like deploy an application or export an application or terminate running workflow instances, we can all do that through a command line. I personally don't use command lines because my spelling is horrible. I can never get them right. So I'm a UI guy. I use the IIS manager side of things. I like my UI. We show over here we have Visual Studio, which is what we use to build our code that we deploy into this host. And on one side, we have our server manager and our system center to show that we have integration in the rest of Microsoft's offerings. So with that, I'm going to get in and do a quick demo. What I'm going to show here is creating a basic workflow. I'm going to call two external WCF services, get the results back together, show you how to do F5 debugging, and then show you how simple it is to host this in App Fabric. And unlike the other two guys, I'm doing this 100% live. So thank you. Well, so I don't have a single thing created. I have a blank Visual Studio service here. So I do have a cheat sheet that tells me what to name my variables, just because my spelling is really bad. So anyways, so let's take a look at my cheat sheet, for example. This is the kind of thought that went into planning a workflow. So I'm going to receive a first name parameter. I'm going to make two calls to external services. I'm going to get responses back from those services. And I want to return an aggregated result for that call. So I'm going to need a variable to hold the first name that I receive, two variables for my calls back from the services, and then a third and or a fourth variable, which is going to be my aggregated result, which I want to return back. So that's kind of what I've outlined here. So let's start off by going new, project, starting from scratch. And we have WCF workflow service application. This is what we use to expose our WCF services. And I'm going to call it live demo. And go from there. And this is going to pop up with our Blake generic workflow surface in a second. The cheat sheet's kind of, you know, it's just because I can't spell, so. And we didn't run this slow when I did it yesterday, so. Okay, so here's what we have out of the box for us when we choose this template. We have a receive request with a default operation of get data. And we have a send response back. So this means if we expose this as a WCF service, we're already have our request response outlined right there for us. So to start things off first, I come down here to variables, and I'm going to define the variables I want to use inside this workflow. Variables have a level of scope as to the shape you're clicked on. So I click on the top level sequential service, and now you'll see I have all the variables that are defined under this activity listed right here. I'm not going to use data, so I'm going to delete that. And I want to receive first name as string. I want to do a first name from call one, because that's going to be my response from my first WCF call. I have my response from my second WCF call, and I have my overall returned results. Now, if they don't match my cheat sheet, that's okay, because the names just have to be consistent in my single workflow. So I've defined them now. Next, I close the little variables window. Now I want to change my operation name from get data to something more representative. Let's do get first name. And I just simply click view message to define the parameters or the message contract that I'm going to receive into this workflow. I'm going to simply click on parameters, and I want to add my first name. And right here, once I receive first name from the outside world, I want to set it to a local variable to be used inside my workflow. I'm going to assign this to first name. It's thinking there's IntelliSense built in here. So as I type first name, it's compilating the IntelliSense. And now it's not responding. Yes, now I'm thinking the live demo may not have been the best idea. Here we go. And we have first name, right? That's what I called it. And you see now the squiggly went away to tell me that this matches a variable. If this was behaving better, you would have saw a drop down, and I would have been able to select first name from the list. So now I have that, and now I want to define my response. Come down here to view message, parameter. I'm going to return my updated first name. And I want to define my return variable. Now you see I have this, RET. Return result. I'm going to select that. So now I've defined the variables I'm receiving and the variables I'm sending back. Next, I want to actually add my WCF service calls. So I do want to go back to the cheat sheet to get the addresses. And these are just generic services that I created. The names mean nothing. I want to add a service reference. And I add the address. I'm going to call this simply call one. And this is going out, getting the information needed to make that service call. And what Windows Workflow will do for us is actually create an activity. An activity is simply, I'll show you in a second, on the left side of the screen, like BizTalk Shapes, WCF or Workflow has activities. So this is going to create activities for us. Then now when we want to make the service call, we just drag and drop it onto our workflow surface. Now, if this simply takes in a string and returns an uppercase, and then I have another service call that takes in the name and returns a lowercase, if I had more complex variables in and out than just simple strings, I'd have to actually add references to those types and build out those types and maybe even create some sort of mapping based in .NET class. This is telling me that it's been successfully added, and that I need to rebuild the solution to get the activity to show up. I'm going to go ahead and add this next one. And I'm simply going to call this call two. Now with BizTalk 2010, that added a lot faster. Now I'm simply going to rebuild. Now, I have the choice as to whether I want to call these sequentially or parallel. We know when we think of parallel activities as it relates to an orchestration that even though it's a parallel shape, we don't get true parallelism. Well, Workflow 4 kind of works the same way, except if we have a asynchronous operation, such as these service calls, and the runtime determines that it needs another thread to receive that response, it will actually spin up another thread, and you can actually get true parallelism in your workflow. In the low latency chapter, chapter 17, I have a test app and go into how to do, find out what threads everything's running on and get that data back. I don't cover that here. So here's our toolbox, and these are all our different activities that we have available to us. It's a much richer set than most of us, if we're BizTalk people, are used to seeing. It's also quite trivial to create custom activities that incorporate a lot of possibly custom business logic that you need to implement time and time again. Typically, I would create like a send email activity if I want to send an email out. What I want to look for now is our custom activities we added here. And you see I have my call one activity and my call two activity. But before that, I want to add my parallel shape. So you simply drag and drop. I have my parallel shape. Let's add my two calls in there. There's one call. Here's the other call. And now I have my two calls happening in parallel. Now I'm going to define my variables. I just click on get lowercase. And over here on the right, you see I have username is the input and get lowercase results is the out. I'm just going to pass in my first name. Again, I have my IntelliSense. And my response is going to be, if I can spell, my response from call one. And I'm going to do the same for the next call. And my response is going to be call two. Okay. And it's that simple. We're making our WCF calls. Next, I want to take both of those responses. I'm going to simply add them together and set them to our output variable. Come over here. I do that via an assign shape. And I have my return result. I'm just going to simply say that's equal to first name 1 plus first name 2. And we should be all set now. I'm going to go ahead and build this, make sure everything builds. And I simply am going to press F5. This is going to launch a Visual Studio hosted version of that workflow. And we can use our WCF tester tool to actually call into this. Going to grab the address once this loads. Yeah. Apologize for the slowness. This is an i7, 8 gigs of RAM. It should be flying. I think it's the Java code I had to install in here. And you see here we get what we expect is when we hit the service. This is all under the covers. This is all XAML. So we could view the actual XML representation of this. In fact, if you even wanted to, you could be coding the stuff in Notepad without the drag and drop experience. Then you can't call yourself drag and drop programmer, so that's no fun. Let's go ahead and grab this. I'm going to launch my WCF test client at a service. I'm going to get an error here for some service bus SDK installed. I'm just going to disregard when that pops up. I'm going to click on my first name. Going to pass in Steven with a capital N and a capital S. And now I would expect to see Steven back all uppercase and Steven back all lowercase when I get my response back. And that's what we see here. Now let's take a look. Is it live? Live. Thank you. So let's go ahead and shut this down. And I want to show you what the debugging experience looks like in here. When I want to debug into one of these shapes, if I was having an issue, right-click, breakpoint, insert breakpoint. F5 launches it inside our Visual Studio worker process. This is going to give me a service bus error again. Okay, come back here. Going to make the same call again and invoke. And this time you'll see I jump right into Visual Studio, right where I set the breakpoint, with a lot of the features I'm used to as a .NET developer. I can see all my variables and my local variables defined over here, as well as call stacks. So we have true and simple F5 debugging in these workflows. Now, this is all well and good. I'm going to go ahead and close this again, stop all my debugging. And let's see what the effort it takes to actually deploy this into App Fabric. So we haven't put it into App Fabric yet. We haven't turned on tracking and monitoring and all that good stuff. Trying to get this guy to shut down. Close some of these. I'm going to stop my debugging. I'm going to shut down the IIS process. I'm going to remove my breakpoint. And now I go to the properties of this project. I go to web. I simply click use local IIS web server, create virtual directory button. And that will run and will be creating my virtual directory for me shortly. I'm going to launch IIS at the same time so we can get going ahead of things here. Let's do a F5 here on my available websites. And here's my live demo. This was the one I've actually done right now. It was just newly populated there. I'm going to go to content view. And here's all my code that I've just pushed out there. Just created a virtual directory back to my solution. And let's right click. Let's browse to this service. I can also build a zip package inside my Visual Studio environment and then take this zip package and import it into either my local IIS or remote IIS if I wanted to, you know, hand this package off or move it into another production environment, either production or staging environment. So let's take a look at running this service again. Now we have a new URL. I'm going to get that silly service bus there. Let's go ahead and run this again. Again, I'm going to pass in Steven with a capital N. Click invoke. This is actually running our service inside App Fabric now. And we get back the same results. But let's go take a look at what we have now available to us with this new thing called App Fabric. So we can go to live demo. And we see up here, once we install App Fabric, we have three new features for us, all under the name of App Fabric. That's a pretty clever name because App Fabric's at the top. It even beats out ASP.NET. So I'm pretty sure there was a lot of thought put into that one. We have a services view, which if we double click on this, this will show us all the services we have available inside this virtual directory. Here we just have our service one. I can right-click on this and see I have different properties available for this specific service. I can go back. I can also right-click on my virtual directory and manage WCF and WF services. Here's where I have a lot of additional features I can add to this service if I wish. Now, with .NET 4, there's a concept of a richer concept of inheritance of configuration files. So when you install App Fabric, it actually makes modifications to your machine.config file, which allows your services to derive its configuration and monitoring settings based on what you've defined when you initially install and configure the system. So if we come down here under monitoring, we'll see it already is checked to write events to database. And we have different levels that we can change this to. And this will define the amount of data that is tracked inside our database. We have the ability to click configure and enable message logging or workflow and WCF tracing to a configuration file. This alone, the team I work with in my past project spent about 40 hours getting our WCF services to do this, which is now just a few clicks. I'm not going to turn that on right now, but you know it's there. We have the concept of workflow persistence. So by default, workflows aren't going to be persisted. And there isn't any shapes inside the workflow that are going to force a persistence if you have it enabled. All persistence is done by you either checking a property on a specific shape or dragging a persist shape into the workflow. There's other things that will cause persistence. If something is running idle too long past your configuration values, it's going to persist. You can choose to take that out of memory or just persist. You have a lot of flexibility in what you want to do. But for right now, let's just enable basic persistence. And that's when I click that, all the commands that I might send to a running workflow, like terminate or suspend or resume, are done via the .NET pipe binding. So this is telling me I haven't defined that on the application, and it's going to do it for me. This is really nice because in the beta, I had to do it by hand. So that's done for me. I get to select what SQL provider I want to use. I only have one. Select that. Continue on down. We have more properties like my workflow host management. I can define when I want this thing to unload, whether I want it to persist, what happens if there's an exception. We won't get into any of this now. It's all documented. You can read into it if you'd like. We have the new ability with IIS 7.5 to have our services auto-start, which means we'll preload those services. I know when I do anything outside of IIS 7.5, I have to do a test call first that typically times out in order to get any sort of response from subsequent calls. Now with auto start, we have the ability to preload and pre-warm our services. We also have some throttling and security settings. I won't go into those. So all I've done now is enable the persistence provider, which we're going to use later. And let's take a look at our App Fabric dashboard. This is our App Fabric dashboard for all the activity in the past hour at the scope of the live demo application. And you can see I've made one call in. I did one test. And under our workflow instance history, we see one completion, no failures. We see more WCF calls because we've called out and we did some gets. Let's see what those are. We can click into completed. We can see all the activity ran against there. We have various service ones. You can click into here and get more information about that actual activity. And the key thing to note here is that I didn't have to do anything to enable all this. I just deployed, and this is all there. So any service that I would deploy in this environment is going to have this just available to it. So with that, I'm going to get back to my slides. Okay. I think I covered everything there. This slide goes into a little more detail. I talked about in the previous slide how there's monitoring and a persistence service. This kind of represents what those look like. Here is our management service and then our event collector service. Our management service is very similar in behavior to what a BizTalk host is. It's actually polling our runtime database for activities that it needs to perform. So when I use my IIS manager, because I can't spell, that's what I'm using. Other people that can spell would use PowerShell commandlets. Those activities that they would say terminate workflow instances, for example, those commands come down through here, through the service host, end up in the runtime database. This management service is actively monitoring for those events. When it sees those events, it performs those actions that those events indicate. This management service is also responsible for our durable timers, and it also helps us with our scalability scenarios, where we want to have a workflow that starts on one box, gets persisted to our runtime database, gets essentially brought back into memory via our management service on another box because it's time for it to either correlate a message or resume from a timer experience. The other thing on here is our event collector service. This is actually monitoring for all the events that our workflow service is spitting out. So anything in this service host is sent via ETW, picked up by our event collector service, and sent to our runtime databases. Remember, we have two runtime beta databases. We have our persistence provider and our persistence database and monitoring database. So this is just represented as one there. So let's not spend more time on slides. Let's get back into real live demo. I'm going to take the same workflow we did, add correlation, and then see what happens when we throw errors into this into our service to see how App Fabric's going to respond. So we're going to go back to Visual Studio. And what I want to do now is have the ability to receive a last name in this exact same workflow, combine the last name with the first name, and return that result to the caller. So with that, I'm going to go back to my cheat sheet. This is not really a cheat sheet, but this is just groundwork thinking you would do when you're creating this workflow. I need to add a series of variables. So I need to add a last name variable to process my last name that's received by the call. I need to add some sort of ID to correlate the first name with the last name. So I'm going to go back and add an ID property to our first call. And then workflow does correlation via correlation handlers. So I'm going to need a correlation handler to actually do the correlation inside this workflow. So I'm going to go ahead and create those variables first. Make sure I'm at the right scope of my sequential service. Click on Variables tab. I want to have a last name. I want to have a name ID, and I'm going to make that an integer. Then I want to have a name correlation. I'm going to come here, browse for types, type in part of correlation as a correlation handle right there, and I'm all set. Now, in order to receive the next request, I'm going to need some sort of activity to handle that that event. So I'm going to come down here, and we have this messaging section, and we have different types of messaging patterns and activities available for us out of the box for our workflow. I want to receive and send a reply. I'm going to drop that at the end of what I've been building already. I want to change my operation to get last name. Then I want to come define these parameters. I want to first receive my last name ID, string. Then I want to receive my last name. And this I'm going to set to my last name variable that I created. Now while I'm here, I'm just going to go ahead and click my response. I'm going to just do the same return. This would be my full name. And set that equal to return result. Okay. So now I've defined in this second set of request and respond activities what I want to request and respond data-wise. Now I need a way to tie my first request together to my second request so that I get the exact same workflow instance when that next message comes in. So one thing I didn't point out was this initial receive request has a property over here called can create instance. If that property was not checked, hitting this workflow through that activity would not be able to start a new workflow instance. So if we look down at the subsequent one that was added, the can create instances is not checked. So that means that anything coming in through here must already have a running workflow instance to be associated with. So let's go ahead and set up our correlation. We do that under the correlation section. And I want to initialize a correlation. I called it name correlation. I want to have a query-based correlation, which means based on data that comes in on my message. And, I need to add my ID. So my first name ID. Casing matters, but not necessarily in my demo. And this is going to be name. Name ID. So now that I'm receiving a name property, I can come in here and use that in my correlation. Here you'll see we have a drop down. My first name ID is going to be associated with just my default key one. I'm going to click OK. Now my next receive, I want to say I'm going to correlate with, and I have my name correlation, and then what I'm going to correlate on. Come down here, select from my data my last name, and it defines it as key one. This is what's going to match the two together. Come over here, going to rebuild. Come back into my service tool. Hopefully it's still there. Skip that error. And now you see I have two sets of bindings. One's for our basic HTTP, and the other one's for the named pipes. This was added for us when we selected we wanted a persistent store. Going to ignore that for now. We have our get first name, and we got our get last name. Click on get first name. I'm going to call this Steven again. I'm going to give it an ID of 8. Click invoke. This is going to go out and return me my updated first name. Now I want to finish this off and come in here to last name. I'm going to pass in my ID of 8 and my real last name, which was Thomas, invoke. And, oh, I didn't update my name. Okay, simple fix. I forgot my assign shape to add my last name to my first name. Return results. Return result plus last name. Okay, save that. And just like that, I am able to make an update. Go back to my first name. I'm going to change my ID this time. Come in here. And see, I got my first name and my last name back. So now what happens when I get errors in these types of scenarios? If I make a call with an ID that doesn't exist. So let's take a look at what happens. Under our get last name, actually, let's start a couple first names here with different IDs. So since it's correlating on ID, it's going to create a new workflow for each ID that comes into the system. So now I've done 5, 6, and 7. So it's going to create 3 different workflows that I'm now going to be able to see inside App Fabric. Let's take a look at what that looks like. I've found, given the VM I have running, that sometimes there's a slight delay in seeing these items populate. We'll see if we get lucky today. It doesn't look like it. I'm going to continue on and show you what it's like to throw in some of these exceptions. So under my get last name, I'm going to pass in some IDs that obviously I haven't created yet. So this is going to be trying to invoke a service where there isn't a corresponding message destination for that. And you see here I got an exception right away saying that it wasn't interrupted because it was unable to match that key with an instance. I'm going to just run another one. We're going to get the same error here. And let's see what we have in our App Fabric in our dashboard. We see here that now we have our 3 idles. And remember, I started 3 workflows with the first name and never sent in a last name. So these are going to be workflows that are waiting to receive data back into those. Now, based on our configuration parameters, we can either eventually, if these things run idle for 60 seconds, 90 seconds, I can persist them to the persistence provider, bring them back later when I need them. Or, you know, they'll just stay here if I set that value high enough. One thing I should point out, now's a good time, is we looked at, in Richard's demo of BizTalk 2010, we looked at the polling interval that you set on a host. Does anybody remember what it was? 500 milliseconds. So by default, BizTalk is looking every half a second for, every 100 milliseconds is 1 second, yes. Every half a second for new work to do against SQL queues. By default, inside App Fabric, our runnable instance detection period defaults to 5 seconds. So by default, if you had a durable timer that was supposed to expire in 1 hour, you could be up to 5 seconds late for that actually being rehydrated. Might not matter, but this should give you a sense of what the App Fabric team was trying to build here versus what the BizTalk team is trying to build. So if you need that fast now, BizTalk is tuned for that. Now, it just says in the help doc, if you change this, you're going to you could decrease your performance. Unsure if you can even set this below 1 second. Doesn't look like it. So surely here you can see that they're counting in seconds. As we're on the BizTalk side of things, you know, we're in milliseconds. So the speed and performance is definitely much, much higher on the BizTalk side. Let's go back into our dashboard. Just want to show you what the errors look like. And we should see some failures. Here we see we had some WCF calls. Remember, I made a couple calls and they gave back errors. So if those were calls external vendors may have made into our system, well, now I have a one central place to see all those errors that have happened in this workflow in my given configurable time period. I can change that up here. So I can drill down into those errors and see what kind of calls and what kind of exceptions people are getting when they call my service. So all this is intended to help us monitor and manage our workflow services. We also have the ability to terminate and suspend and resume our instances. Let's go to these idle ones. You can right-click. You can suspend, cancel, terminate, delete. This all has a very similar feel to what I think most of you are very experienced with. Okay, that's done with the demos. Let's jump back into our slides. So App Fabric is free. BizTalk is $35,000 a proc. So what's the catch, right? I've kind of highlighted three of the main reasons here on this slide. Tracking events are not guaranteed inside App Fabric. So we have our persistent service and our monitoring service, which we showed on the slide. We use ETW to collect our events from our WAS IIS and write those to the monitoring database. If that service goes down, there's a certain number of events that could get lost in that process. If that service is stopped and activity still runs, certain events will be missed. As compared to BizTalk Server, where we have BAM and we have essentially guaranteed tracking built into the product itself, we have no chance of losing that tracking information in our BizTalk Server. The next big point is the adapters. Now, in Workflow 4, we have the ability to call the adapter pack via extensions, which is great, but that's only available through a BizTalk Server license. But we don't have other adapters like a file adapter, like an IBM MQ adapter, SQL, SharePoint, all the rich set of adapters we have inside BizTalk Server. Those don't exist for us out of the box for workflow. And the last one, which is really an important part, is the overall tooling. For workflow, we just have Visual Studio 2010 or Notepad, whichever one you choose. For BizTalk, we really have a rich mapper, which Richard showed earlier, and we have a rich schema editor to help us define more complex schemas. So let's talk a little bit about when to use what. And I like to call this for now, because as technology changes, things adopt, it's hard to say where the future will go for these two products. They're definitely a line that seems to be drifting closer and closer together. I think eventually we'll see the ability to host workflows inside a BizTalk Server application. We're not there yet, and I'm unsure when that'll actually happen. But for now, App Fabric is really best suited to help us offload some tasks from our expensive but important BizTalk servers. So in our case, we had a web service aggregation where that might be something that we've done in BizTalk, but now we can offload from BizTalk or do new development in App Fabric and save BizTalk for order processing, for example. App Fabric is also great when the sender has an easy ability to resend the request. So when it's not a guaranteed delivery from end to end, if the vendor doesn't get a response back, he simply makes another request 3 minutes later, might be a good scenario for App Fabric. It's also good to be used when tracking and monitoring is important, but not something that is 100% mission critical. Now, business might look at this and say, oh, it's always mission critical, but there's always a price, and sometimes I've seen them back away when you have a high price of BizTalk Server. But what we have with our App Fabric is really now an alternative to somebody who doesn't want to pay for BizTalk Server, never would have bought it to begin with. Well, now we have something that us in this room can now help them implement. And AppFabric also excels at internal solutions that are used for internal applications and nothing that's going to be exposed outside of our enterprise. So let's summarize again. We kind of talked about when to use BizTalk, when to use AppFabric. We talked about AppFabric being the host and caching. Didn't cover caching at all in this session. We talked about how we have tracking, we have our persistence, we have our scale through our databases and our persistence and monitoring services. We saw how we had easy troubleshooting via F5. We saw, did anybody see me open a config file? But yet we had tracking and monitoring. So did anybody count the number of lines of code I had to write? Zero. I exposed a service, I made two external calls, I aggregated results, I had tracking and monitoring, and I had correlation with zero lines of code, which makes me happy, and hopefully it makes everyone else happy to say that you're a drag and drop programmer. I'd like to see the pure.NET guys pull that off in the 15 minutes I did in the demo. Well, maybe 20 because my computer was slow. So what are some of the next steps? Well, you can get out there and download AppFabric and .NET 4.0. Take a look at the workflow. I really think if you're experienced with BizTalk, it's going to be a very natural transition into the workflow editor. You have variables, you have activities, you have a lot of the same concepts. The admin and management side of AppFabric, again, is going to be very similar to experiences we've had in the past. And again, it's all about making us more valuable, and now we can offer more things to our clients when they push back and say, you know, we don't want that BizTalk server. But there are times where we need to make the stand and say, you know, BizTalk is what you need to do. You're doing order processing, you're making credit card service calls, you need the reliability of BizTalk server. But there's other times where that might not be necessary. We have all our sample code to be downloaded on Packet Publishing or on eventually on biztalkgurus.com. And then don't forget, get the book. So, is there any questions? Yep. Yes. It's okay. Yes. It does. So the question is around the polling time. Yeah. Correct. It doesn't. So the question is around the 5-second polling that AppFabric has against the persistence database as compared to BizTalk's. One of the key differences here is, remember, BizTalk is a publish and subscribe architecture, so everything has to go into that message box database. So it's important that things are pulled out of that database as quick as possible because that does impact your response time. AppFabric and .NET 4.0 isn't a publish and subscribe architecture. So when that message hits your workflow, that's in memory right then and there. To return a response from that, there's no persistence that's done unless you physically say persist. But that workflow is still idle in memory and no polling to return it. Where you get impacted with the 5-second time is, say, that's you had a persistence point, for example. You persisted your workflow, that service and server crashed, you lost it. Now that workflow instance is still in our persistence database. It's going to get unlocked. Another server in your farm is going to see that and continue to process it. And that is where the 5 seconds will come into play. It will wait until its polling interval to look for that message. That and like our durable timers or things where we're waiting for a response that lasts longer than we need. Now, if we get a response message, the service will go out and try to get that instance. There's other things in here about lockability of workflows. If another server has it, how long does it lock it for? you can really get into a lot of depth, and there's been a lot of thought around how all this will work. But essentially, the takeaway point is, no, that won't impact response times when you want to deal with low latency scenarios. So, any other questions? Yep. Correct. The ability to pre-warm a service is included with IIS 7.5. So we expose it in here in AppFabric, pretty easy for you to get to. But I think anything that, even if you don't have AppFabric installed, it's a setting on your app pool to preload those services in that app pool. So I think it's in Windows Server R2, 2008 R2. So anything else? Oh, yep. You definitely can. So this is all a framework, just like you can do in WCF, you can do in workflow. If what's provided for you doesn't work, you can write your own. Yeah. It is, as far as I know. Yes, they might say if Oracle, then drop, but I don't know about that. So, yep, in the back. That's a good question. I've not looked at exactly how AppFabric handles that scenario. I don't believe it. Oh, do you know, Alan? I tested it and they do persist. Okay. So if you have a graceful shutdown, it's going to persist, just like it would in BizTalk Server. If you had a catastrophic shutdown, obviously when those get restarted by your second box, it's from the last persistence point. So any other questions? Yes. When you persist the workflow, you have the message in there with it. So like on your, there's such a thing as called a transactional receive, that when you receive that message, the first thing it does is persist to the database. So when you resume that, all the context of that workflow is there, which would be the message, but it doesn't have a concept of a message as being a separate entity. It just belongs as part of the workflow, but that doesn't mean you couldn't create that kind of functionality on your own. This is a framework, so you can extend it and do whatever you want. So ISVs out there that want to extend this and add that functionality can do that. Anything else? How was the live demo? Better? Good? Yeah? Good. Thanks.